Blog Talk Radio.
The Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Larrison-Danz, and today we have a wonderful international guest joining us in just about 30 minutes, and in doing so, it's part of a marvelous expansion of this program, which I really am very excited about, to have more ways of welcoming guests worldwide onto the show. And we've certainly had international guests on the program before, but now we're going to try to use Skype and other means to make it so much easier for people to connect with us, because we are a worldwide community now. And I'm going to speak a little bit about my own background as such a typical person coming from an evangelical background in the United States, and how I'm now connecting with leaders worldwide who are shifting this planet into what I used to call, and what I was taught was called, heaven on earth. And it's the same concept, and it is visiting us in multiple ways now. And the guest who will be joining us in about 30 minutes is Nicolia Christie. Now, Nicolia, and I will speak more about her work when she comes on a little bit later. Nicolia is a co-founder of World Shift International, and she has a new book out called Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, a Handbook for Conscious Evolution. And I will say that this book is so very valuable for those of us on all different parts of the awakening process. And for me, just like everybody else, awakening has been a journey. And in many ways, this awakening has gone on our entire lives if we look at it very closely. And that's certainly been the case for me. But for me, it really got going about 10 years ago when I had to confront my own mortality, which is often the way that we awaken in the world. And it has taken me a long, long way. And as I mentioned, my own background, I am the granddaughter of an evangelical minister who used to preach on street corners in the New York City area. I personally did not know my grandfather because I was a youngest child and came along pretty late in life. And by the time I would have been able to interact with him, I could only interact with him to a limited degree, but his influence was felt upon the family. And something I feel that is so very important right now is how we are all being called to the table of dialogue and peace and love, and that in all of these backgrounds, there is love, and we can find the love. If we can get past even our own self-judgment or our own tendency to perhaps reject some of the things that we feel are more fear-based, we can find fear on just about every path. I have found fear in the midst of some New Age practices, even if you want to use New Age in a very loose term. It all depends on how you approach it. And this is why this show is about evolving out of fear. And more I realize that fear is a catalyst. In fact, I even changed the description of this show fairly recently to reflect that, how we can be thankful, very thankful, for all of the gifts in our lives, even the challenges, especially the challenges. When we are caught in darkness and fear, when we emerge from that state, the light shines so powerfully. A friend of mine has used an analogy, which I think is a really beautiful one, of what happens when you light a match in a darkened cave. What happens? It only takes a single match, and the entire place is illuminated. And that is the key to the shift that I feel is on the planet right now. And if not for my own pretty dramatic awakening, which I've talked about at times on this program, which involved visionary experiences and was very dramatic, it was a spiritual emergence. And because of that, I was able to see both the fear and the love clearly, although it took many, many years, and it's still going on for me, how to integrate this. Now, something that Nicolia will talk about later, which she discusses in her book, and we have multiple guests coming up, actually, to talk about this concept, which is coming up more and more, is this concept of zero point. I don't think that I had encountered the term zero point until really quite recently, and yet it is such an important concept right now for so many of us. I have found myself encountering this notion of zero point where, you know, just like many of us worldwide, I was in the corporate world too. I've had a very diverse background. You know, I have a math degree, which later I got a computer science master's degree, and my background was always computer science and a lot of scientific studies in my background. And for a very long time, I actually buried any kind of spirituality. When I was in school, when I was as a teen, I actually was open to it. And what's really interesting about my teen years is I encountered the New Age movement. It was in the late 70s, and people were starting to write about the New Age movement. That was when it blossomed, and it reached out to me in the midst of my evangelical world, where I was already questioning and questioning and questioning and struggling incredibly with concepts like hell. I could not come to terms with concepts like hell. And even as a child, I have a note that I wrote as a child where I was apparently sitting in a sermon listening, and I wrote a note, and I paraphrase right now, but basically, you know, if we're supposed to love our enemies, isn't Satan our enemy? And I was asking questions like this as a child, and I don't think that I was all that unusual necessarily. I think that many children, especially today, when it just seems like children are coming onto the planet, and we've talked about this on this show before, the new children, they just tend to be more awakened. And children can see through the illusion a lot of times much more clearly than we can as adults. They see unconditional love. And I was clearly mystified as a child about the inconsistencies. And yet there was love. And that's something I really want to bring forward today, since we are speaking with a worldwide audience, especially later when Nicolia comes on, is how we really are being drawn to this from multiple backgrounds. And that is the shift. And what we are beginning to see is how we can reflect upon our past in a love-based, higher consciousness way. And And I wanted to, since one of the things we're doing right now is we're going to give Nicolia time to connect today, since we're doing this a whole new way, and that's why I'm speaking an introduction for a while to give her that opportunity a little bit later. In any case, one of the things I thought it would be worthwhile to talk about was something that I felt I didn't even understand, nor was I exposed to years ago in Sunday school. For some reason, they skipped some of these verses, and it's really important because it relates to how we can discover who we are and the unconditional love of who we are and this concept of conscious co-creation. We can discover this within the midst of all of our traditions. And I know that Nicolia and others in the world are bringing this forward as well. But I felt this might be a good introduction, given that I bring such a, you know, my own perspective to the table, having come from this background. And what I wanted to read here is a verse from the Bible that many people may not realize is in the Bible. And it's actually two verses because they refer one to another. And this area, it is in John 10:34 is the verse that I'm going to read. And actually, I'm going to preface this with John 10:31. Basically, they were about to stone Jesus for claiming that he was God. And listen to this. I want you to listen to this very carefully from a shifted perspective of who we all are in the midst of the divine. Again, the Jews picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus said to them, "I have shown you many great miracles from the Father. For which of these do you stone me?" "We are not stoning you for any of these," replied the Jews, "but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God." Jesus answered them, "Is it not written in your law, 'I have said you are gods'?" If he called them gods, to whom the word of God came, and the scripture cannot be broken, what about one whom the Father set apart as his very own and sent him into the world? Why then do you accuse me of blasphemy because I said I am God's son? Do not believe me unless I do what my Father does. But if I do it, even though you do not believe me, believe the miracles, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father." Okay, that is a quote from the New International Version of the Bible. What is so very interesting about this, and this is why I want to draw this out and how it relates to the shift in the world, this actually refers to a verse back in Isaiah, which is Isaiah 41:22. So I'm going to take us back to Isaiah 41:22. If I can find it. I hope that's the right verse. Actually, I think it's Psalms. I think I actually have the wrong verse. Okay, well, I'm going to readjust here. I believe it's actually Psalms 41:22. I almost know this verse by heart, but I'm going to go ahead and find it here. And I'm doing this with very real purpose today to show how we are so much on the same page. Well, actually, I'm missing the right verse. Uh-oh, my note is incorrect. But essentially, it refers to a verse in the Old Testament, which I'll put in the show notes because apparently my note is incorrect. But there is a verse in the Old Testament that says, that ye are gods, ye are all children of the Most High. And that's what Jesus is referring to. And I don't know why, well, actually, I probably know why, we weren't really taught that when I was a child, because that's a very challenging area for someone to reconcile when They are attempting to create an illusion of separation. And what Jesus was really trying to tell us in an enlightened way, even in the midst of being stoned for miracles, was that we are all children of the Most High. And that's what we were referring back to in the verse in John. And so I just felt that that was a very important thing to point out this morning in preparing for our guest today, who is all about how we can come together and understand who we are in the world, who we are with respect to the divine, who we are with respect to unconditional love. And something else I was taught as a child and into adulthood too, and I will tell you part of my journey, and this is often the journey of people who come from different religious backgrounds, is that we find ourselves walking into new ideas. And then we fall back into old ideas, and you can bounce back and forth, like a yo-yo almost. Sometimes it's fear. In fact, often it's fear that'll cause us to fall backwards. But other times, there can be a more enlightened type of going backwards where we begin to find the roots of unconditional love within our past. And we begin to draw all the pieces together like a beautiful tapestry, which is what this world actually is. This is a beautiful tapestry of all of humanity. And every single one of us, no matter where we come from, we are all capable of evolving. We are all being called to evolve. And I feel that that is exactly what happened to me when I confronted my own awakening many years ago and began to see these things truly. But something else that I was taught when I was young was how this concept of being one in Christ, now, it was taught in a rather exclusionary way, and I'm sure today we'll also talk about this concept of inclusion, and we've talked about this on this program before. We had Bishop Carlton Pearson, for example, on the show, one of my friends who's been on the show multiple times, once an evangelical minister, and he is now preaching the gospel of inclusion. Everybody is a part of the divine, and no one could ever be rejected from unconditional love. He is one of many people doing this now. In any case, this concept of being one in the body of Christ is actually a very powerful concept that can be expanded simply to understanding that we are all one in the midst of the divine. If God is omnipresent, and I speak to those of you also, this show, I know, attracts people of all different beliefs. And I really want you to reflect upon just how much closer we all are than we may realize sometimes. Because if you believe in an omnipresent God, a God that is everywhere, then that God, and I know so many people believe this, from conservative to the most liberal, if you want to label it that way, no matter what your walk of life, many people believe in an omnipresent God because that's what they've been taught. I was taught that from childhood, that Jesus was in my heart. Well, what does that mean? It means that God is within me. The love of Jesus, the love of God, the divine love, without having to place any label upon it, that was in my heart, I was taught. And so we can go back to these concepts and we can celebrate them. One of the things I choose to do coming up, in fact, I just established this, is I'm going to be talking about Heaven on Earth at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles. That's coming up in February. And I carefully chose that topic because I believe it's a bridge-building topic. It's really important right now in the world to build bridges and to understand how these traditions are coming together, and I believe they meet in a place called Heaven on Earth, which is a part of the shift. And I do hope, and I know we will talk about this concept of zero point, because sometimes you have to be brought to a particular point, basically stripped of all the things that you felt kept you secure, in order to see and embrace the shift that is in our midst. And we are seeing this in the world right now. We are seeing it. I am still connected to so many loving people that I love who are evangelicals. They're seeing it within end times prophecy right now. They're seeing a lot of things that seem to correspond to end times prophecy. Well, what are the end times? They're actually the beginning times. They're not the end. And because the end times ultimately usher in heaven on earth. They're the end of a paradigm. And so with so many people seeing that the end times appear to be here and that there are some things that seem to correspond to prophecy, even in the midst of intermingling that with fear, because that happens. You know, it can be a very fear-based thing, and there is a lot of fear in the world right now. It's very easy to fall into fear. Even on this show, I have often said that I created a show about fear, and yet I fall into fear too. I mean, it happens to all of us, and it helps to understand that fear is a catalyst. It also helps to more and more consciously be aware when it happens, and say to ourselves, that's an illusion, because a lot of times it's just falling into old patterns. One other thing I will say that has certainly helped me, the last show was on gratitude, and we explored it very deeply with Dr. Alan G. Hunter, who wrote the book Gratitude and Beyond. And one of the things he speaks of, and this has certainly helped me in my life, is getting out in nature. This is something that is new for me. Not exactly new, but to do it so consistently. One of the things that I've been doing in the last month is walking a nature trail every day. I walk at least 2 miles every day, rain or shine. On the days I can manage, I've missed a couple days in the last 2 months just because of appointments. I couldn't manage to do it, but I still went to a nature trail. I still went there and stood in the midst of natural beauty. And I speak to you and am truly blessed to be speaking to you from the beautiful Pacific Northwest of the United States. I live in Oregon. I live outside of the Portland metro area. And there are some beautiful areas. And as I say that, the sun just came out just really brightly. All morning long, it's been cloudy. And the sun just emerged and is shining in my window right now. And I feel that's an accent right there to what I'm saying, is that the light does shine. And yet there is beauty in the rain. There is beauty in the mist. When I walk in the forest, when I walk in the rain, and I've actually recorded that and put it on my Facebook page, what it's like to be in the rainforest during the rain in the last month, it's a beautiful thing to listen to the nurturing of the rain and to know that it is facilitating the growth of the beautiful forest. Now, we can look at the clouds. We can be in the city and get rained on and complain that we're getting all wet. But when we look at these things in our natural world as the gifts that they are, even if sometimes it seems like we don't want to see the clouds, it's been cloudy every day, that happens in the Pacific Northwest. We can have days and days of clouds. When that occurs, we can curse the clouds. We can say, you know, where is the sun? Or we can celebrate the beauty of the mists. Celebrate the beauty of the rain. Take ourselves back to childhood when we used to play in the rain. I have friends, even as adults, who puddle jump. If it rains, they love thunderstorms. They'll go outside and dance in the puddles. This is what it means to be awakened in the world. And I have found great joy in walking 2 miles in the pouring rain. Although I do wear a coat because it's winter here. It's not a warm rain. But even so, just to listen to the rain is a wonderful thing. Just to stand and look at a river flowing, to look at the shimmers in the water, is a beautiful meditation. And it is a gift of the earth. The earth has given this to us. And when you start to find those places of natural beauty around you, no matter where they are, you will suddenly see beauty everywhere. Since making a practice, a committed practice to walking in nature, I see natural beauty in everything. I can be walking on a city sidewalk and see a weed and say to myself, in fact, I've had to catch myself, and I think I'm on the trail, and say to myself, well, now, isn't that beautiful? And then I realized I was marveling at a weed in the sidewalk and seeing how beautiful that was and connecting it to the beauty of all the greenery I see out on a nature trail. And that is the key. When we bring the beauty of the earth into ourselves, when we immerse the gift that nature gives us into ourselves and it becomes part of our very being, and we make a practice of this, beauty is everywhere. It is everywhere. And it has opened my eyes in the last month in remarkable ways. So I just wanted to talk to you all about how awakening is a process. And it's an exciting process because every new step reveals the world in an entirely new way. And I have to say that, you know, the gift of nature right now is seeing the world much more clearly and celebrating it. And so this is part of my own journey in the past weeks. So we're getting closer to when Nicolia is going to attempt to connect, and we are doing a new procedure today, and I'm kind of watching her to see that she'll be able to connect okay. We'll all send her good thoughts and positive energy, helping her to connect today, because we are doing something new, and that is part of what we're called to do in general. I choose to do it even live on this show because we are all in the midst of authenticity here. This show doesn't have to be done with smoke and mirrors. This show is a very spontaneous act. I am simply an individual who chooses to speak, and that's how it started over 3 years ago. And this is just a very authentic experience here. So Nicolia is going to attempt to connect to the show in a new way. And so we're going to give her time to do that and send her good thoughts and positive energy to be able to do that. And I think now would be a good time. I'm going to go ahead and play a song by Grammy Award-winning Larry Sire. Larry has so very graciously, when he appeared on the show last summer, Larry has given us some of his music to use. And he also wrote the theme to the Frontier Beyond Fear. It was a theme that he had already, but he spent time to customize it just from the heart to help this show. And I am in a tremendous space of gratitude to people like Larry for doing such things. So I'm going to go ahead and play that song, and we'll all hold a good thought that Nicolia will be able to connect here very soon.
Nothing impossible. Brotherly love.
Endless energy.
Truth as the rule.
Visit your universe.
True kindness.
Sprouting wings and flying.
Effortless health.
Perpetual motion.
Self-discipline.
Open communication.
Family unity.
Time travel.
Clear visions.
Speed of light.
World at peace.
Nothing impossible. Nothing improbable.
Refrigeration.
Moving pictures.
Human genome.
Man in space.
Atomic particles.
We can't be alone.
We are not alone.
Okay, we have Nicolia coming in on the line. We encountered a couple of technical difficulties, and I'll be bringing her on in just a moment, but I do want to give her a proper introduction before I bring her on the line. And we may talk a little bit more briefly today. We'll see. This may be a preview for two shows, but I'm so happy that we managed to connect in some way. We're still working on getting this working in the way that we would really like, but it's all a work in progress. Here's what I want to say about our guest, Nicolia Christie. She is joining us from France, and she has a new book out called Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, a Handbook for Conscious Evolution. And we are so very blessed to have Nicolia with us today because she is the co-founder of World Shift International. She is also the founder of the New Consciousness Academy, and she has written other books as well, more than one book. She's known for her book 2012, A Clarion Call, Your Soul's Purpose in Conscious Evolution. Her website is up on the page, NicoliaChristie.com. She is bringing that into fruition, a brand new site within the next couple weeks. And I know many of you listen in the podcast and will find it there. Also go to worldshiftinternational.org. And again, those links are up on the page so you can find them. Or if you're listening on iTunes, you'll have to cut and paste them into your browser, but you know how to find them. Just a couple things about her book, her latest book. Both of her books are praised by remarkable luminaries. This is from Irvine Laszlo. This book is outstanding, crucially timely, and important. And Irvine is a Nobel Prize nominee and the author of 83 books, and I know many people are familiar with Irvine's work. Barbara Marx Hubbard said about her latest book, "This book is magnificent, a labor of love and a gift to us all." So I am just so very delighted to welcome Nicolia Christie onto the program. Hello, Nicolia.
Hello,
Susan. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you very well. Can you hear me?
Oh, good. Yes, I hear you very clearly. So we are connected. Yes. Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Although
well, thank you very much.
we're still learning to expand technology such that we can connect in the most ideal ways, but we're getting there. So I'm just very blessed to have you here today. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And I feel very blessed to have been invited onto your show, Susan. So I'm humbled and thank you very much.
Well, I will tell you, Nicole, one of the things I talked about in the intro, and I don't know if you were able to hear it since you were probably connecting in the first half hour, is how I feel, Nicole, we are all being called to the table of peace on this planet and transformation, because I myself am a granddaughter of an evangelical minister. I come from a very conservative background, and yet I had a dramatic awakening, and all of the concepts you speak about in your book just call to my very being, and, they resonate with things that I've encountered as well on my path, and there's so many new things to explore as well. And the audience for this show, Nicole, we are all awakening. We're all on different places in our paths. This show tends, and I feel we are all being called. And I wondered if you could talk about that, this time on the planet, Nicole, where we are right now, how it is we are all being called to awaken.
Yes, well, thank you for your question. Well, it's a very, very important time on the planet. It's a crucial time in the evolution, if you like, of humanity at an individual and at a collective level. And in a way, we've had this whole 2012 phenomenon, which is what 2012 A Clarion Call was about. It was an in-depth exploration of where we stood as a humanity, again, at the personal and the collective level. And so we've shifted out of that whole 2012 experience. And for me, 2013 is a bridge year. One of the events that was happening around the 2012 phenomenon was that we had entered into the galactic alignment. It was 30 years ago in 2016. It ends in 2016. And so we are still in this major, major shift and transit. And this goes on until 2016. And once we come out the other side of 2016, we're kind of out the other side, and we're really into this emerging new epoch, what I describe as a new consciousness for a new epoch. And I talked a lot about, and I have to go back in terms of what I was saying around the 2012 phenomenon, which is what my work was really focused on for 4 years. It was absolutely dedicated to that date and bringing as much awareness as I could for people to really understand what was going on. And what I spoke about in that book is that we are awakening ones, and awakened ones are shifting from a state of light workers to light beings. Now, anyone listening to this show might say, well, what is a light worker? And a light worker really, as I see it, is an advanced soul incarnate, an awakened spiritual soul incarnate, here for a specific purpose, to support humanity, to support global evolution, to support peace on Earth, to support creating and co-creating heaven on Earth. So I kind of feel that the race of, in quotes, beings on this planet are from many, many different levels and dimensions off planet. That we're not all from the same place, although we all originate from Source with a capital S, God, Divine, Creator, Source, however we want to word it. This is where we all originate from. But we are also multidimensional beings, and we exist in multi dimensions. So the human beings on the souls incarnate on this planet are not all from the same place. And there are a wave of us which really began to incarnate in massive numbers around 1939. But there were scouts that were arriving well before then to set up, I think the tone, the resonance for those of us that would incarnate in massive, massive waves. So 1939 was a time where these mass waves started to come in. And then there was, again, a hugely massive wave that came in the early 60s, the early 1960s. And the wave that came in the 30s and the 40s were the change makers of the 60s. And the ones that were born in the 60s and the 70s are the change makers that are actually really carving inroads now to do with personal and global evolution. So what I've been was saying a lot leading up to 2012, because I was feeling it, is that we, those of us who are the in quotes light workers, we've incarnated en masse here to help to take the planet, humanity, global consciousness to the next level. And so as we have gone through that process ourselves, and most of us have, you know, I think we could probably say have been to hell and back, whatever
yes,
hell is.
Yes, actually true.
Because, you know, we have to walk the talk. We have to be able to say, I've been there, I've done it, I've worn the T-shirt. I'm not just ad-libbing from some book or some sermon or some lecture I've heard. I've actually
yes.
been there. I know what I'm talking about. You know, I carry
yes.
that imprint. I carry that energy. And so what I was saying is that the light workers are beginning to shift, and it depends again on how awakened you are as a light worker, because again we have the dimensions of the least awakened and the most awakened.
Yeah.
But the light workers are, the most awakened in particular, are shifting from light from being light workers to becoming light beings. And this really brings us into the whole concept of moving out of the mode of doing, which is a
yeah.
very mental thing. It's often very conditioned. It's often catalyzed by tradition, expectations of society. And so we are moving away from the expectations of others, of tradition, of the culture, of religions, and so forth, of the politic, if you like, of the world and of the locale, as it were. And
yeah.
we are beginning to break free and stand in our individuality, in our uniqueness, and radiate and vibrate and shine light into this planet. So as we become light beings, we're returning to that state, if you like, remembering, a lot of my work is about encouraging people and supporting people to remember who they really are. Because what
yeah.
can happen is we become so conditioned with our upbringings, with our communities, within our you know, our religious cultures, our societal cultures, the world culture, the global culture, so forth, that we forget who we really are. And yes, you know, in human terms, we are someone's son, someone's daughter, someone's mother, someone's father. But actually, outside of all of those roles, those human roles, we are, if you like, an advanced, dare I say it, an advanced consciousness
yeah.
incarnate in human form here at this time for a very, very specific reason. And that is to birth this new epoch, to embody this new consciousness, and to then bring forward a new era for humanity, a new epoch with a new consciousness.
Yes. You know, one of the things that I know Eckhart Tolle has said a lot about, and I know you speak of this too, is you know, the notion of ego, and how sometimes we can get very wrapped up in where we came from, the ego oriented aspects of this. And I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit, Nicolia, and help, because we've heard so much about this concept of ego, and I know you write about it quite insightfully in your book. How does that influence us and hold us back? How do we release as a planet those influences of the ego? Could you speak to that a little bit?
Well, yes, ego. Well, you know, again, it's the ego and the integration of the ego and the healing of the ego, again, is very much down to the level of awakened consciousness that we are. And to start that, to begin that process, is to become self-aware. To become self-aware is to actually engage in process, in self-process work, so maybe to work with a therapist, to go to self-transformation classes, to really begin to start to look at meditation. But again, one has to be a little bit careful around the meditation, because often what can happen with meditation is if we don't have the psychological grounding, and this is something I speak about again and again and again, is that the psychological grounding has to be there, because
yeah.
if we have the spiritual awareness and the spiritual awakened state of mind and heart, but we don't have the psychological grounding, we can't integrate the ego, because the ego is formed in early childhood. You know, we incarnate with an ego story because human beings have an ego. So from our, you know, I believe in past lives. So from a past life perspective, we've carried an ego imprint into this lifetime, which gets activated again in our early childhood. The ego comes in actually to support us to survive, because we are, you know, when we incarnate as souls freshly into this infant body, and this infant body that begins to experience the environment, that infant body, that consciousness that is so fresh and so close to source, so close from the dimensions we've just incarnated from, is so ultra sensitive that it can be annihilated very, very easily.
Yeah.
So what happens is the ego is it begins to develop, and it comes in initially in order to help us to survive. But what happens is the ego then starts to take over. It starts to take the position in the driving seat, and then believes it is the self. And of course, the self is not the ego. So the ego, the self, is sort of shoved in the boot somewhere, and the ego is driving around, driving the car, driving the life, if you like. And the ego gets an overinflated sense of its self with a small s, because I differentiate self and self. So self with small s is ego, wounded personality, wounded child, and self with a capital S is authentic self, is the true self. It's the soul energy incarnate and active and present and visible within the being. So with the ego, what happens is we go through infancy, we go through toddlerhood, we go through our young years, we hit puberty, we hit teenage years, we go into teenage, then we go into our 20s, 30s. And if it's not checked, if it is not addressed and looked at, it just grows and grows and grows and grows, and it grows out of control.
Yeah.
And so, too, does the drama in our own lives, the drama we bring into other people's lives, but also the drama that's happening in the world. And I wrote an article a couple of years ago, and I said, if anyone was to ask me what is the single contributing factor to the state the world is in now, it's just summed up in three letters that are joined together in a little word called ego.
Uh-huh.
So what I speak about, I know, there's many traditions and many sort of philosophies and spiritual paths that talk about the ego and what we do with the ego, and for the main part they talk about, dominating the ego, controlling the ego, killing the ego. But my way is all about love. So my way is, we need to love the ego, we need to validate the ego, we need to really validate, honor, bow to it for what it has done, because it has saved our lives. It has actually made it possible for us to be here today. But there's a point where we have to say to the ego, okay, it's time to retire. Now, how we go about this fundamentally is through doing self-awareness work, to going to therapy, to beginning to look at our history, at the historical self, at the wounded inner child, at the personality level. So we go back to really trace all the way back to where the ego first came in. And if we do deep enough work, we will find the moment that we became aware that the ego kicked in and the ego came in to save us. And we go all the way back, we dialogue, we work with, we communicate with, we form relationship with, we honor, we bow to the ego. We say, thank you so much. But the ego also needs to know, needs to trust that it can retire and that it's not going to mean death, and I mean physical death, if it's not standing as the guard at the gateway, making sure that the jewel, the precious jewel of who we are, is guarded at all times. So I wrote Ego Self Fairy Tale about 4.5 years ago, and it went into Clarion Call, and it had such an impact. I had so much feedback about that fairy tale. I thought, it has to go into this new book.
Yeah.
And that fairy tale goes into deep understanding of how we actually work with the ego and how we transcend the ego. We don't want to kill the ego. We don't want to, you know, get rid of the ego. What we want to do is make a friend of the ego, but the ego stands behind us We don't stand behind it. And so we have a negative ego. And I don't like that word negative, but use it just to save a bit of time here. We have the, let's call it dysfunctional ego expression. That's better than negative. A dysfunctional ego expression. And we have a positive, functional, healthy ego expression. And the healthy ego expression serves our purpose in the world. It serves us. You know, ego is fine. What has happened is the word ego has become distorted, and it's become, how can we say, it's been attacked by religion, it's been attacked by spiritual philosophy, and psychology in particular has all but, you know, slandered the ego. And I believe we need to have a different understanding, a new understanding of the ego, and that's what ego self fairy tale speaks of. And by the way, that is, I put that together in a little booklet that people can just buy just as a booklet if they're ever interested in working with their ego in that way.
There's a lot more
I could say about it.
Yes. Well, I feel that this is a really important contribution of yours, Nicole. One I'm only beginning to understand better myself, because it's so true how we become very confused. There are so many teachings about the ego. And I love how your approach is integrative. I mean, it still has the transcendence aspect, but it seems very much immersed in gratitude, which is the base. I mean, love, it's very love-based. And I personally think that I can benefit, and a lot of people can, in really understanding this in a more love-based way, because other ways seem rather fear-based. It's almost as if we run away from this concept of the ego, as if we're afraid of it, and that you face it. You look at it in a whole different way and integrate it. So I think that that is very powerful for us all to learn more about.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things I say this, and people often look at me and very quizzically, that I have a very, very simple mind. To me, everything, I see everything through very simple eyes. And so when I look at the world, the way it's developed, the way the mind has developed, the intellect has developed, and the impact that has on the world and the state of the world that we live in, because it is run by mind and it is run by intellect. It's not run by heart. And it's not run by emotional intelligence. It's certainly not run by psychological and psycho-spiritual integration. So before I wrote Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, I was really contemplating religion and spirituality and what has actually happened, and seeing the hold it has on the world, seeing the impact, the devastating impact it's had on the world.
Yes.
You know, the wars that have been fought in the name of God.
I
was really sitting with all of this, and I said to myself, what is religion? What is spirituality? What does it boil down to? What has got lost? And again, this is what I write about in depth in the book, is it the heart of religion, the heart of spirituality is what has got lost, and that is love. It's love. And it's giving it, you know, I mean that in the least fluffy way, the least love and light way. But it is true, the path of love, that is the way forward for humanity. However, when we look at the psychology of the individual and of the collective, and we look at what we're also carrying in our DNA from our ancestors and so forth, we are carrying so much. So it's very hard for most people to just sit in love, because there's still so much, as you say, so much fear running through people, and people are afraid to be honest with each other, because honesty leads, usually for people, it leads to rejection, abandonment.
Yes.
The people have adapted themselves, they have twisted themselves into shapes that they're almost beyond recognition of who they actually truly are, in order to adapt, because we adapt in order to survive. And so there's a difference between surviving, which for me is all about security-based needs and fear, and feeling alive, you know, living, which is all about being authentic. It's absolutely not about adapting. And in that, we have to take great risks. If we actually decide, I'm choosing to live love, I am choosing to walk that path of love, then we need a huge amount of courage, because to walk that path, one has to look at oneself and say, okay, I need to take this torch and I need to shine this torch inside of me and to go to every possible dark crevice, dark corner, and shine the light of love, of awareness, of consciousness, so that I can dissolve and transmute the dark energy. And dark energy is anything that is fear.
Yeah.
Into love within ourselves. So we then live that. But when we start to live that more, there's another big, big step. And I call it an evolutionary leap, a huge evolutionary leap we make, which is when we start to say, I am now choosing to be transparent, to be honest. And if it means out of the 100 people around me, I lose 99 of them because I'm speaking my truth. I'm speaking it with compassion and sensitivity. But then I'm just letting the chips fall where they may.
Yes.
So I'm speaking with love. And if I lose 99 of those people because of that, then that's the commitment I make to walking the path of love. Because we can still love those that fall away. We can still hold them in love in our hearts. But at the same time, anyone in our lives that we feel we have to adapt in order to maintain that relationship, in order to survive, then we are living inauthentically. And how can we be the examples? How can we walk the talk? How can the world change if we're continually adapting ourselves in order to appease others, not to be rejected, not to be abandoned, or to save a relationship?
Yes, yes, yes. It seems, and there can be rejection. I mean,
yes.
We've had people on this program, I mean, a really good example, evangelical minister lost his entire church because he realized that the divine was love and that there was no hell. And he spoke authentically. That's Carlton Pearson. And there are many people who are coming from belief systems that those belief systems themselves will challenge us. I mean, it's just the nature of it. And so it does take courage. I so can see that. And it can take time to have the courage to do this, especially with those we love. I have found it's ironically almost more difficult to be totally authentic for those with those right around you than it is for, you know, somebody across the world or, you know, the country.
Yeah.
And that's where we wear our masks, isn't it, Nicole? We put those masks on and, you know, there is pain hidden behind those masks whenever we put a mask on and create an illusion of ourselves instead of who we really are.
Yes, I mean, what we're doing is we're shifting. If we're on an evolutionary journey of the self, we are shifting from adapted to authentic. In psychosynthesis, they talk about the adaptive self and the authentic self. Now, the adaptive self is the ego. The authentic self is the true self. So what happens is we move along that journey and we move further away from adapted and adaptation. And we move closer to authenticity and being authentic, we find it impossible to continue to adapt in our behavior because that is inauthentic to us. So we begin to feel and need to live authenticity. And, you know, Gandhi said, the truth is the truth, even in a minority of one. So if only one person stands among 7 billion and says, the way forward for humanity is love. That truth is 100% valid as maybe 7 million people saying, no, actually, it's about industry or it's about, you know, economics or something. It's as valid. So this is why I always say, just because you may be the only one that holds an understanding or holds a viewpoint, a beautiful viewpoint, and if nobody else around you agrees with that, it does not in any way invalidate your viewpoint.
Yes. You know, there's something that I'm hearing from you and from others that is actually a fairly new concept to me, Nicolia, although maybe for some of you it's not a new concept, but I'm sure to the audience it may be. And it is this concept of zero point. And I will say that this seems to relate not just to spirituality, but many of us called to spiritual work, it seems like we can no longer make the compromises required to operate within, you know, the cutthroat corporate world, or, you know, that doesn't care about sustainability, or which, you know, makes all these horrible compromises, and we just can't do it. And so then we must find a new way to live, a new way entirely. I mean, it's not, and so it seems to affect us in so many ways. And so when I read about Zero Point, where we're just stripped, in a sense, and ready to go forward, it really touched me. And I think it's an important concept. Can you please explain it for all of us and how it, I know that many of us listening are experiencing this now.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, it's pretty much what you said. It's a simple concept. Again, you know, there's nothing overtly complex about it. You know, it, I wrote that around, again, it was around the energies of 2012, where there was just this sense of people just being stripped to the core, you know, lives changing, breakdowns happening in people's lives, uncertainty, confusion, disorientation, people not knowing where they belong on the planet, which is still, you know, quite a rife experience at the moment, because people are relocating on the planet. They're needing to go to different, their energy is needed in different parts of the world. They don't necessarily understand this at a conscious level, so they just think, well, it doesn't matter where I live, I'm kind of not feeling rooted. I believe that we are becoming, you know, the light beings and light workers to light beings are becoming citizens of the world. You know, we are really beginning to embody that one voice, one people, one nation, planet Earth. So, you know, we, the entire planet is home, not just one place. But anyway, that's just another story we can go into another time.
Yes.
But with Zero Point, it really has been about those energies that have been really strong since 1980 when we entered the Galactic Alignment. Those energies have been working on us. It's like if you imagine that wind, you can hear the wind. And so we can hear the changes that are happening around us, but you can't see the wind. You can see the effect of the wind, but you can't see it. It's invisible. And it's the same with the energies that we've been, if you like, percolating in, especially the last 30 years, and most especially since 1999, the time of the quickening I spoke about in Clarion Call, and I think I mentioned it in this book as well, where it was a 13-year window of time that the Mayans had predicted would be the most accelerated period of human evolution in history, if you like. So what's happened is we've gone through this massively accelerated breaking down in order to break through. And I even say that, you know, before 1999, if you went into therapy, you might be looking at, you know, a year certainly before you began to see really feel changes, 2, 3, 4 years before you started to get a sense of, yeah, I do feel I'm transforming, 7 years before you feel, oh, who I was when I went into this work is not who I am now. I've emerged as something else, you know, the butterfly, if you like, emerging from the chrysalis. What would have taken 7 years before, since the quickening, can be done in 1 year, 18 months, less. Sometimes it can be an epiphany moment that can change everything. So Zero Point was referring to the energies, the way those invisible energies were shaping us, were permeating us to cellular level, core level, and shifting, changing, clearing, dissolving, until we had reached this point. And when I say we, I really am talking about awakened ones, because even in the process of awakening, we don't necessarily reach Zero Point completely until we reach that more awakened state. And when I say awakened, I don't mean enlightened. I just mean psychologically and spiritually awake. The light bulb is on, and it's on fully. So what happens is people that are awakening and moving towards that Zero Point within themselves will begin to feel everything is beginning to fall away, shattered belief systems, everything crumbling, you know, all these things I just talked about. But awakened ones, the ones that have really had that psycho-spiritual aha moment and have really arrived somewhere within themselves, this is when they've been stripped to the core. And these are, if you like, the torchbearers. These are the ones that carry forward for humanity. And it's like a neutral vessel. It's a place within that enables a new imprint. A lot of people have talked about DNA activation, the genetic blueprint shifting to the divine blueprint. And I would say the zero point, that really beautifully sums up the shifting blueprint from genetic to divine. Because as we shift out of genetic blueprint and we start to activate the divine blueprint, this is when we really start to break free from conditioning. We're breaking free from patterning and tradition and becoming our own unique expression of soul energy in this world, what we are here for. And I often say, to say this piece, and then I'll just pause for a moment for you to speak, Susan. That,
go ahead.
You know, I say that there's such a proliferation of, in quotes, light workers on the planet now at this time, and of course then the crystals, the indigos, the rainbows, the diamonds that have come. These are all higher and higher and higher octaves of awakened state as they incarnate. The light workers had to incarnate into the densest matter. So they kind of went in with their sleeves rolled up where it was really, really dense and a lot of darkness. Whereas these, soul generations incarnating that follow are awakened at a much younger state because the light workers, if you like, have changed the frequency enough, a base enough level for the generations following in terms of these awakened soul generations to anchor into and not have to go into that depth and density. So as we move forward, we find that we're creating more space and more awareness. But it's the light, it's the awakened ones in particular that have reached zero point who are carrying the torch forward for a neutral consciousness where the blueprint is shifting from genetic to divine and really beginning to embody that. And then they create a frequency on this planet which enables highly advanced beings to also incarnate, to continue on with what is happening while the light workers really start to move back towards the state of being light beings on this planet, bringing a very, very high frequency and energy and a higher consciousness, an awakened higher consciousness, which is permeating the grid slowly but surely.
Yes, yes. It seems that this concept of multidimensionality is very key, and it's not always readily understood. And something I appreciate, Nicolia, that you are saying and others on this program are saying as well, is we really do need to expand beyond our focus just on this planet, that it goes far beyond what seems to be our observable reality. And also the concept of reincarnation, and I will tell you that I have embraced that too. You know, even though I came from a background where that was not a part of it, I completely embrace it now. I feel that it makes sense, and it's actually, maybe you can reflect on that too a little bit, because something I've thought about is that it also relates, this multidimensional concept, our relationship to what some people call past lives, and yet a lot of people are just calling them concurrent, because there is no time in multidimensionality. These lives that we have and how they relate also to just our oneness with humanity, and not just humanity. I mean, everything in the universe. Again, not restricting ourselves just to this planet. It just, it requires such expansive thinking to really, and heart-based awareness. So if you could reflect on this a little bit, that would be very helpful, I think.
Yes. Well, you know, it's like you say, it's about this heart-based, isn't it? This heart-based awareness. And so if we look at past lives, we look at future lives, we look at the now, what I've written a lot about is the fact that, you know, in 2012, what was really known was timelines were converging, all timelines were converging on the 21st of December 2012. And what that actually means is there's no past, there's no future, there's only the now. And we had this concurrent, as you say, this concurrent experience of past, present, and future channeled and streaming into this now moment. Now, it's interesting that the American government and the Russian government were conducting experiments for many, many years, decades, where they were time traveling. And they were time traveling into the future. But what happened is they could not get beyond 21-12-12. Now, they had all these underground bunkers, all these places built where they were doing these time travel experiments, and they could travel back and they could travel forward, but they could not get past 21-12-12. And that's because all timelines converged on that date. So we are not a product of our past. But what happens is the past is lodged in soul memory. It's lodged in cellular memory. What we're doing really now is we're dealing with the residuals of what has gone before and lodged into the soul memory or lodged into cellular memory and heart karma, so much heart karma on the planet. So one of the things I speak with people about and I share is when people say to me, well, how do I actually clear the imprints, how do I clear the energy or the residuals of these past lives that have gone before? Because I believe we, you know, we've had, you know, all number of past lives, some of them we're probably not too proud of, but nevertheless, those energies are still there. And what I say is that ultimately what we need to do, we are multidimensional beings. This is what we have forgotten. We are multidimensional consciousness. We are source consciousness incarnate. And so what we need to do in order to dissolve these imprints, these patterns, is to really immerse ourselves in light. Because, yes, we can go to hypnotists, I think that's the right word. We can have hypnotherapy.
Yes.
We can be taken back into past life regressions and so forth. But for me, again, up until the day at 21-12-12, yes, it worked. But for me now, it's about light. It's about really infiltrating our multidimensional bodies, our multidimensional energies with light, filling with light. And for me, the meditation, the daily meditation, is to close our eyes and is to just visualize absolute intense downpourings, downloads of light coming into consciousness, coming into the body, the physical body, the energy bodies, filling ourselves with light. Because when we connect to a high, high frequency and high frequency light, it is the greatest healer. Love is the greatest healer. Light is love. Love is light. But it can have, it has a physical presence, and that presence, you know, that physical presence can be blinding, blazing light, and that cuts through like a laser. It can cut through anything. And, you know, we do spend so much of this lifetime clearing, unconsciously, consciously clearing the past, because we have taken an evolutionary leap as a global humanity in terms of the 21-12 phenomenon, life before 21-12, life after 21-12. And as the Hopi and as the Maya predicted, that we are 21-12-12 catalyzed the beginning of moving into a new era of peace. The Mayans called it a golden age, and the Hopi described it as 1,000 years of peace. Who knows what happens after 1,000 years? We may have ascended. Earth may not be needing, if you like, our presence. We may have ascended to some other dimensional reality in 1,000 years, because our consciousness could have progressed so rapidly that we, you know, maybe even the energy body of the Earth may just be too dense for the conscious. So it could be that she herself has another role to fulfill. So, you know, I believe consciousness is shifting at a rapid, rapid pace. We can look at the mass, in quotes. We can say, look, you know, I don't know what percentage we give to the mass, 90%, 95%, 99%. How do we penetrate mass consciousness? And this is something I sat with my first book, How We Penetrate Mass Consciousness. And for me, it's a laser light. It's a laser beam that's coming from source consciousness. It's about us awakening to and embodying source consciousness whilst in this human body. Now, of course, we can only embody the tiniest amount of that, because it would blow us apart. The nervous system would not be able to take the extremity of the energy. But it is about slowly but surely embodying and living, walking that consciousness into this life, bringing that frequency onto this planet.
Yes, yes. I really so appreciate how so many people are being called to this concept of heaven on earth. I am seeing it. I'm seeing fascinating things happening just among people that I love who, you know, can no longer, it's like all of a sudden, I know you speak of restorative justice in your book, and that's so important in the world, but so much of that originates from, you know, these religious paradigms of punitive justice and, you know, feeling that we're going to be punished instead of, you know, being beings who are growing and who are accepted and loved. And I'm seeing people, Nicolia, more and more beginning to reject this concept of punitive justice in the world and for themselves. I mean, in every possible way. And even as you talked about how we look at our past lives and things like that, I feel like, you know, when you fill it with light in the way that you are speaking, it guides us to this restorative approach, opposed to constantly fearing punishment or even fearing karma. There's a lot of that going on even now where there is very real fear of karma and what it's going to do. Or, you know, it manifests in different ways in different places. You know, if the Christians very conservatively would say, no, it's hell. You know, that's how it's going to manifest. And yet we're being guided to unconditional love. And so I offer that up to you to reflect upon some more. As you see, I don't ask a lot of questions. I just reflect and we go back and forth because I just so appreciate these concepts and how we can just – I love this conversation. So if you could reflect upon that some more, especially the restorative justice, I would appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I mean, what's coming to me as you're speaking is, I don't know how it fits into your question, but I just share what I'm actually with, what's coming up for me as you're speaking.
Yes.
That everything that I write about it comes out of my own experience. I don't sit and observe the world. I don't sit and observe what's going on in the world or what's going on in other people's lives and then kind of write about that. For me, it's absolutely about what I'm personally experiencing. And with restorative justice, and that came into me very strongly a few years ago because it's when I got involved with World Shift, which, by the way, I wanted to say World Shift International is winding down. So if people go to the website, they'll find it's static because I won't go into the reasons for that, but basically it's an evolutionary progress for myself and Kingsley Dennis, who co-founded it with me. He's moving a direction with his work, and I'm moving a direction with starting, when my website launches, I'm starting a new community called Conscious World Community, and that's going to be the new platform, if you like, for that global side of my work, which I feel is so important. So the point, anyway, coming back to what you were saying, is that when I first got involved with World Shift, I can't remember exactly, they had five, they were kind of like philosophers, if you like, and one of them was justice. When I got involved with them, I said, well, what kind of justice are we talking about? Because, you know, the word justice is a beautiful word, but again, what's happened with it over time is it's got a very strong charge associated with it. So what is very important for me is that we find a different kind of justice. And at the time, I wasn't aware of restorative justice. So I said, what I feel is we need to begin a kind of wave, if you like, about compassionate justice. And at that time, I was having a conversation with a wonderful friend of mine, Wendy Weber, and she said, no, I hear what you're saying. She said, what she's working with is restorative justice. And as soon as I heard the terminology, I thought, yes. So we then adopted that terminology, and I started to explore it and look at that about being conflict resolution and about being able to sit in love, in validation, in acknowledgement, in compassion, in forgiveness, in understanding, in order to resolve differences and issues, to heal broken connections, to find a way of healing those. And so wherever is possible, it is about applying those qualities to any situation and beginning to, again, phase out conditioning, because we are conditioned. From the moment we're born, we do something wrong, we're punished for it. We do something, in quotes, wrong, and we're told we're bad. So these tapes, if you like, are still running in the unconscious, And as Bruce Lipton said, you know, the unconscious mind is, it creates 99% of our experience on a day-to-day basis. So the tapes that are running in the unconscious mind are the all-important tapes. So we need to take the old tapes out, and we need to put the new tapes in, which are talking about restorative justice, talking about compassionate justice, talking about empathic justice. And these systems need to, and they are beginning to permeate society. I was at somebody's house the other day, and they had the television on, and I can't remember what was on, but it was something that I would call very 3D, third-dimensional program.
Yeah.
And the term restorative justice was used. And I just sat there and I thought, amazing. I'm so delighted to hear that on a mainstream television program.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yes, and I think that we're noticing this kind of thing more and more. I mean, I'm finding amazing things where, you know, I'll read some book that a conservative person has written, and here's the term co-creation. And I thought, wow, that person just used the term co-creation. And actually, in the way, you know, this is yet another awakening minister that I'm aware of. This is one of my areas that I explore because I'm just so fascinated with the awakening going on right now. And, you know, maybe that's yet another area. I know we're dwindling in time, and you have so graciously called the show, and I'm so thankful for that. But, you know, maybe better understanding conscious co-creation, which I know you talk about that as one of your 12 foundation stones for a new world paradigm, and it's certainly something that's coming up everywhere, conscious co-creation.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, in the book I talk about, the book is about personal and global evolution. So, you know, the global side of it, I talk about the six core values from an evolving world, which are peace, restorative justice, sustainability, compassionate action, conscious communication, and conscious evolution. And then I talk about the 12 foundation stones for a new world paradigm, equality, inclusivity. Now, inclusivity is so important. For me, inclusivity is about there's a place at the table for everyone, no matter what their conduct. There is a way of finding and maintaining and holding a place at the table. So rather than people being sacked, dismissed, rejected, you know, all these awful things that happen to people, it's about finding a way where if somebody's conduct, for example, is, how can we say, it creates great disharmony, we don't punish them for that. We actually find a system, we find a way of trying to understand and helping them to understand and support them to understand where their behavior was going, what was behind it, so people can learn and they can grow out of disharmonious situations. So, 12 foundations, then equality, inclusivity, understanding, forgiveness, empathy, co-creation, cooperation, co-support, collaboration, non-monetary transactions, that's a whole show in itself, non-violent, compassionate communication, and unconditional giving, receiving, and doing. If we could set a society on those foundation stones, we would be really, really moving forward and really evolving at a conscious level, at a collective level. And this is when we could really begin to see and sow the seeds of 1,000 years of peace and in the golden age.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's so interesting you refer to that 1,000 years because that's yet another concept that brings me back. I mean, these concepts, they just keep recurring, and you bring them forward so beautifully. There's an integration here that is truly magical because, you know, that's the millennium that I was taught as a child. It's 1,000 years of peace. And, and you know, these things are all there, and we are ready to step up to the table and embrace them from different backgrounds. We can do this. It is part of the shift. And so much of what you say resonates totally with me. I mean, the non-monetary transactions, that actually came up with Michael Tellinger. He's writing a book on that. He was a recent guest as well, another Inner Traditions author, and he's looking at that as well. That is showing up a lot, and it is important. I mean, there's so many aspects. We could do 10 shows. We could probably do a show on every one. But as we're in the last 5 minutes of this show, I just wanted to express one of my core areas, which is gratitude, so based in unconditional love, and just tell you, Nicolia, how thankful I am that you came to this show today. And even though we had a couple of technical glitches getting you here, and I'm very thankful that you were so gracious to be here with us today and share these things. And thank you for the work that you're doing in the world, because it's so important.
Well, I really, really appreciate you saying that to me, and I can only return the gratitude and say to you that also listening to your voice, and just before we came on air, I was just listening in, and I love the energy that comes from you. There's such it's a delightful, light, positive, optimistic, inspiring energy that I feel from you. I think what you're doing on the show, the questions that you ask, the people that you're having on, it is so, so wonderful. And I do truly feel blessed that you invited me onto this show and gave me an opportunity to share some of my own insights, if you like. So thank you very much, Susan.
Oh, thank you so much, Nicolia. You really just touched my heart. Thank you. You've got me in tears here now.
Sorry.
Yeah, but it's good. Good. You know, we have to allow that. That's part of our authenticity, isn't it?
Is that it's so important.
I allow it more and more.
Yeah. Receiving is so important to validate.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that is being validated to really receive what is actually being shared with them, you know, because it's so, so important. So important.
Yes.
And we, you know, those of us who are awakened really do have a sense of purpose, and we're living, and who are awakening as well, are really wishing to, and are living purpose. And, you know, for me, you are on that, very much on that platform, personal to global evolution. You're really serving something so important to all of us. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, Nicolia. And I have to say, I so appreciate now having an awareness of what you're doing in the world, because I want to expand that myself and better, more explore where you're moving into, because I think that what you're doing is so important. And I hope that many of us will explore that, because, you know, we're all finding ways to communicate together. It's amazing the bridges that are being built, the connections. They are magical. And I feel this is one. And so, once again, thank you. And whenever this show finds you, I guess it must be, I know it's evening there, I hope you have a wonderful evening. And I wish you just wonderful peace and love on your path. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and I wish you a beautiful, beautiful day. Thank you.
Thank you. You take care.
And to you, Susan.
Thank you. Much love to you. Okay, just in the final minute, I will quickly preview the next show I'm just all tingly after that interview. What a wonderful, wonderful presence on this show, and that's one of the ways I feel it. I'm all tingly as I speak to you, but quickly, the next show while we're live is Friday, December 6th at 10 a.m. Pacific, another early show, which works out just fine, actually. 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, Danielle Rama Hoffman will be talking about manifesting the deepest desires of the soul. And this will yet be another love-based interview, and I'm really looking forward to talking with Danielle on Friday, December 6th at 10 a.m. Pacific. And welcome to all of you listening in the podcast. I know that this show kind of exists outside of time for all of you. And knowing that time is an illusion, I welcome you across time, always. You are here present with us right now, and I want you to feel that throughout this show that you just heard. your energy was with us, and I felt it across time. So whenever you're listening to this show, frontierbeyondfear.com is the way to find the archived broadcast as well as what's coming up. And I'm so thankful to the community around this program. Thank you so much for being here, everyone, guests and listeners all. I am appreciative of you, sending love your way today. Thank you.